You are listening live to the program. Your teams, your town, your program.
There's a line drive into left center field. That's going to get down and go to the wall. Rounding second, headed to third is Goldschmidt. They're waving him home. Goldie's going to score. It's 1-0 Cardinals.
They beat Milwaukee 4-1. Team had the most wins in the NBA this year. They beat Boston 4-3, and they're up 3-0. Team with, I think, the second most wins in the NBA this year. So you get to the NBA Finals, it's not about seeding anymore. And for those that are thinking that this is going to be an easy series, I don't even know what to say to you people.
I know the work that we all put into it, so I know what we're capable of. But nobody's satisfied. We haven't done anything. We don't play just to win the Eastern Conference. We play to win the whole thing.
Happy anniversary.
Adam Trovetta.
Got you on my mind. Happy anniversary.
Adam Trovetta.
Got you on my mind.
And now, amazed that he made it a year, Soren Petro.
That I lived a year or that Adam made it a year?
Yeah.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us here on what is now a sun-splashed Wednesday. Looks like the clouds are going away.
Seems that way.
Sun is coming out, so hopefully you're getting a chance to get outside and enjoy some muggy weather. Welcome to soggy.
Yeah, there are times when the rain...
Soggy town, population... Curtis's pants.
Yes. There are times when the rain brings a nice cool spell. Most often, the rain just makes it muggy. When the sun comes out, good. Now it's hot and sticky, but that's okay.
We'll deal with it.
We'll deal with it.
A lot to get to today here in the program. We will play the feud with Todd Lebo. An epic clash of really warring families. It's a goofy little game we like to play.
Yeah.
It's fun.
The second version I agree with.
Yeah.
Goofy little game we like to play.
There you go. That's
called Dad Feud.
That's about all I can say about that one.
That's all I have to say.
We'll play that. We'll get some Lebo sounds. Frank Bull with us in the 4 o'clock hour. Get some Frank opinions. Play What in the World, Seren. How stupid am I on current events? Turns out, really. Daughter and her friend laughing at me. I didn't know something yesterday. I didn't know it so much that I don't even remember what it was.
They just go, Dad.
You know? So, yeah.
You don't know what it was?
No, I just love the random stuff that's sitting around.
Slaying around.
Yeah. Here, well, I hope nobody needed that script. It's going in the recycle. And then this isn't right in the five, is it?
Yeah, I don't think that is entirely accurate. Yeah.
Nope, that is the result of what happens when I try to work on multiple things at once.
Tim Bontemps.
Yes. Of ESPN.
Bontemps.
I think he pronounces it Bontemps.
Okay.
But to me it's Bontemps.
Bontemps.
Let's say Le Bon Temps Roulet, which means his real name is Tim Goodtimes.
Tim Goodtimes.
That's what they call him. Hey, comes Timmy Goodtimes. He's like, yes, I've heard
ESPN
that before.
NBA writer. Yes. No need to kill a tree. I've got a pen.
Thank you.
So don't. I saw you like even. No. We'll just write it. We'll be good. Tim Bontemps. ESPN's NBA writer will be with us. We'll get you ready for the NBA Finals, which am I the only one? Just sidebar, because I want to start with the Royals. You can grab a phone line right now if you want, 913-3810-810. Might talk a little stadium stuff here a little bit later on here in the program, but we'll talk some Royals baseball, Royals Chiefs Sporting, K-State KU Missouri, always a topping the program, Sporting in action tonight over at Children's Mercy. Mercy Park coming off a big 4-1 win. I don't like the midweek matches. I love them as a fan to watch them and consume them.
Yeah.
But when Sporting is digging out of a hole, which they continue to do, and they've been doing a nice job of late, mostly of late, the St. Louis match, notwithstanding, I worry like, oh, are they tired?
Yeah.
Because that, you know.
In some degree, it's an opportunity to make up a little bit of ground when no one else is playing, but that impacts your ability to win, then that doesn't really do much good, does it?
No. And so I love having it, to watch, particularly because the Royals have got the always valuable 2 days off. How did this happen again? You were explaining it to me, and I literally just glazed over.
In discussions with...
not because it's not... I appreciate that you're like, okay, here's what it is.
But it is kind of one of those things like, I'm sorry, what?
In
multiple discussions with the man who knows everything, Todd Lebo, and some articles that I was seeing on the topic. The Royals, in the years past, it was often Royals, Cardinals, two there, two here, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. That was not the case this year. These were separated, I guess, with the new, everyone playing everyone, they were separate. The series that just occurred was initially scheduled for Tuesday, Wednesday, but the Cardinals wanted to play on Memorial Day afternoon, so they played it Monday, Tuesday, leaving 2 days off instead of having a day off on either side, Monday and Thursday. It's just back-to-back days off. So a scheduling quirk there. They don't have a Thursday game set, the Royals. And then the return match was, again, scheduled to be, they could have had it in midweek, probably the same situation. The Royals wanted, from what I've heard, the Royals wanted their series against the Cardinals not to be a midweek series. They wanted it to be on the weekend to get more people to go, because people will come from St. Louis more for a Friday and Saturday game. But in doing so, they sacrifice a Sunday game. So when the Cardinals come back here later in the year, there will be a scheduled off day on a Sunday. I don't recall the last time that's happened to the Royals, but so whatever schedule, they didn't really lose a date. They just another series. The series where the Royals Cardinals would have been now has an extra game in it, because there's a 3-game series there against somebody, the White Sox or Guardians or somebody, and the Royals Cardinals are now playing the weekend with the Sunday off. So they're sacrificing the difference between a Sunday crowd and a weeknight crowd for the difference between a Friday and Saturday crowd and a weeknight crowd. Does that make sense?
So did they put the schedule out to the teams before they released it, and then they say, okay, this is how we'd like to kind of doctor it?
It would seem that way.
So there were conversations had, like, okay, yeah, we'll do that.
Here's where it's set. Can we do Monday, Tuesday? It's just two teams. Sure, why not?
I don't know. Like, for baseball, is that good for the team to get 2 days off or bad for the team? In their last six, they've played .500 baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Before last night. Now they're 3-4 in their last seven, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe they are even 3-3 in their last six. I'd have to think back to how the wins and losses came up. But is that bad or good for this club? Like, I tend to think, like, you're playing well, let's keep it going.
Yeah. And they're coming home. It's 2 days off before a home match, so they've been sitting. I'm sure they got in late last night, and they're just chilling for a couple of days before they play again. So I don't think it's a great thing, but I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing, particularly for a team that's, you know, the measure of their success this year isn't going to be whether they can take 2 out of 3 from the Rockies or whatever. It's an overall assessment. So I don't know if it's a bad thing.
It's an odd thing. I want to point something out about where the Royals are right now. We'll talk about the game itself. And again, you can grab a line, 913-3810-810. Hit me up on the Twitter. It's at SorenPetro, SorenPetro. The San Diego Padres, this is a Royals thing. Stay with me here. The San Diego Padres were... Today is their last day with Bally Sports. Like, right, it was yesterday or today is when their payment is due, and if not, the Padres can leave Bally Sports, and they're expected to either today or tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow. I assume it's like May 31st, but maybe it was May 30th. They had to get a payment, otherwise their time is done. The reality is,
it says Major League Baseball will take over broadcast of the Padres games beginning Wednesday after Diamond Sports missed the rights fees payment to the regional network.
Okay, so must
let the grace period expire.
Okay, so the grace period.
Yeah.
They missed a payment probably on May 15th, and 15 days later, May 30th was the final day that they had. They had a grace period to get it in there. Due on the 15th, past due on the 30th, and so they didn't do it. So now Major League Baseball is taking over their games. I want to point something out. The Padres are winning. And Diamond Sports, Bally's, is not paying their bills for a winning Padre team that is a standalone team in that town. The Royals are losing, and they are continuing to make those payments.
A team that isn't standalone.
Is not standalone.
In a town that has the defending Super Bowl champions.
Right. What does that tell you?
I think it tells us something that you said.
Well, that's true.
Back when it happened.
This is a terrible TV deal.
This is a terrible TV deal.
Yeah.
You called it, and this I think is evidence of it.
In 2020, we talked about this. Like, this deal is not it's not enough. And why are you signing on now when everybody else, when it looks like the landscape is changing? But here's my point. Bally's is, I don't like using the term astute or good business on anything that has to do with, you know, a company that's defaulting all over the place on their investments. But what they've basically done is, okay, we're not making money on these teams, so we're going to quit paying that. They can go bye-bye. Like, we're just losing money anyway. Why are they making the payments on the Royals? Because they're actually making money on the Royals TV deal. Now, one, that is a compliment to the fan base of the Kansas City Royals. You're passionate fans. Even when your team sucks, enough ratings on there that they can sell the commercials. It also speaks to the people who put together this television deal. You put together a deal that 3 years later with the team still mired in the bottom of the standings. You're not getting enough money to make it a loser for them. Think about that. I mean, in 2020, I'm assuming the idea was that they'd be winning by now, as they were already, going in? I don't know what date in 2020 this was signed, but let's just say it was in the midst of the 2020 season, which is the pandemic year, which wasn't a good one. I don't know when the hell, I can't remember when it got done, but we looked it up. It was 2020. And the idea had to be that, well, we're about ready to turn the corner, right? And so you thought it was going to be winning, going to be a winning team. And this is the deal you negotiated. And now here you sit, barreling towards well over 100 losses, and you're still not causing them to lose money.
August 24th was the date.
Was that about when we got going?
That was a month after, exactly a month after. The first games were on July 24th. It was exactly a month after they resumed.
Okay. And that season was already not going well.
Right.
Right? Because they buried themselves right out of the gates that year too, right? Mm-hmm. That little shortened year. How do you put together a TV deal that you it's so bad that they're still profiting?
It makes you wonder.
I mean, I'm open to somebody. Feel free to give me a shout.
It's like if you
shoot me a text and tell me how I'm reading this wrong.
Yeah. It's like if you put something on sale and the shelves clear out in a day, you lowered your price too much. You know?
Yeah.
It's another version of that.
I mean, Padres. The Padres aren't winning this year. I should back that up.
They're four games under, but they're
four games under, but they are yes. loaded with stars.
Yes.
And they're expected to get going at some point. But
coming
they're not
off a trip to the LCS. Did they make the LCS last year?
Yeah, they're sexy picked by many to win it all.
And that is a money loser. That's how much money they were giving the Padres. Yeah, the Royals? No, we're clearing cash. Yeah. We're gonna keep making those payments. I'll be happy to take a call from anybody who tells me this is what you're missing here. There may very well be.
Is it me?
If they're just paying some teams and not paying the others, I assume they're paying the ones that they can make money off of. And so that's how bad that TV deal was for the Kansas City Royals, that they're on the plus side with the Royals, but not the Padres. I don't get it. Anyway, so that's of note. The Royals get another gem from Zach Greinke. Can't do anything with it. They just will not score for Zach Greinke.
1-5 with a low 4 ERA.
Go out and 10 Ks. Mikolas has some stuff.
Yeah.
But he's not a big strikeout guy. That was his career high. 10 Ks. Randy said this per Baseball Reference. I retweeted this a little bit ago. Per Baseball Reference, the Royals' most valuable hitter, Salvador Perez, this season was signed by the organization in 2006. Their most valuable pitcher, Zach Greinke, was drafted by the organization in 2002. I'll leave it up to you to decide what that means. Well, let me decide.
I think we've decided.
The young guys need to go. Like, let's play. Let's see it. Right? And that's one of the things. Look, I don't want this to turn into Philadelphia. I like Philadelphia. I like visiting Philadelphia. But I like coming home to Kansas City. But, like, at some point, isn't it on the guy who's got the ball in his hand to get the guy out?
Yeah.
Isn't it on the guys with the gloves to go catch the ball? Isn't it on the guys who get to grab a bat and go swing it to hit the ball? Like, all we do is sit around here and complain in this town about the general manager. That change has been made. We'll see. J.J. Piccolo may need to be replaced as well, but for all the reasons we've talked about many times, too early to tell on that. Matt Cotrero, they changed out the manager. He may need to be changed one day, but it's too early to tell on Matt Cotrero. Brian Sweeney, the pitching coach, same thing. Too early to tell. Yep. When is it on the – when does, like, the players get held accountable?
I would argue we're past that time.
And is that the bigger thing that's working here? Is the, you know, entitlement is the term that everybody likes to use. You know, that there's just a sense of entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that's entitlement. The term we used a couple years ago was coddling. Like,
yeah.
How do you go about? Matt Cotrero does not strike me as a guy who's going to throw a chair in a clubhouse and scream and yell. And we know he's not going to bench anyone because we've seen MJ Melendez get picked off with, you know, down four runs. We've seen all kinds of brain dead decisions made by. And by the way, Melendez getting thrown out last night. I mean, I'd be willing to be like, they're just trying to make something happen, trying to get a run on the board for Greinke. And by the way, the next thing was like a ground out, so he probably wouldn't have scored if he stayed at third the next to that end of the inning. But to start the next inning was a ground out, so he probably wouldn't have scored anyway. So I get it. And I am always in favor of, you know, sending a guy with two outs if you're at, like, what, a 40% success rate? That's more likely than a guy's going to drive you in.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Like, whatever it is. I don't mind a guy getting thrown out at the plate with two outs. Because, you know, it's not in the middle of a rally. You don't have multiple hitters that can get it done. But doesn't that kind of speak to the – just if we hadn't seen the other things that MJ Melendez has done, we'd be like, kind of a pisser. I'm not sure what he was thinking there. Which, by the way, how come nobody's talking about – what was the third base coach didn't give a sign? He's running with him and yelling?
What is this? Did he have a spasm?
That was one of the comments I read in the write-up was like – well, I think he was running with him and yelling the instructions.
What? That's new.
That's the Stars write-up last night.
That's new.
Now, maybe it's been changed or edited, but when I was reading, I was like, what happened on that? Because I was having to go back. I was doing a football podcast, and so I was going back, and I was zipping through the game, and I'm like, what happened on this? What the hell is going on? And then I read in the write-up, and the Stars like, I didn't see a sign. Well, what are we doing here?
He's just shouting.
Right? But
go!
Which, to me, I was kind of like, all right, so I guess, I mean, this is just going to be kind of how it is with Melendez. I mean, I'd be willing to say, like I said, it's enough. Well, it's just one time, if it wasn't the fourth time, you know, like on something along those lines. But, you know, on all these guys, like, it's on them. Like, Bobby Wood Jr., like, get hot. Oh, he was hot? Hit two home runs in a game. Yeah, and went 0-for-8 with 5 Ks the next two. Like, you looked it up. He mm-hmm. has not had – what was the stat?
One of the stats I had, just his slash line over his last 40 games is not particularly strong. 205, 239, 415, 654. I thought, let me kind of look and see if there's been any kind of hot streak. So you know how when you look at a guy in any given day, you can look at his game logs on Baseball Reference and find out what he's done in his last 10 games. You just click the two lines, and then it comes up. If you had started doing that on Bobby Witt Jr. on April 26th to see what his last 10 games were, and then done that every game since then, a little over 30 games, there would be only one time, and that is, let me check the numbers, that would be 33 times you have done this. Only once would you have seen an on-base percentage over 300. twice you would have seen under 200.
Over a
10-game span. If you started on April 26th looking at his last 10 games and did that every day since then, that's 33 times you would have checked his last 10 games. Only one of those stretches would he have had an on-base percentage over 300, and twice he would have been under 200.
I wonder if...
And his OPS is literally thriving just on the home runs. The on-base has been brutal.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, guys that just don't get on base that much just never do.
Yeah. But, guys who hit home runs often tend to get on base, and he's hitting some home runs.
Them.
Yeah. Because it suggests that part of the reason you hit home runs is you have good pitch recognition, a good pitch selection, and good pitch decisions, which has become the buzzword for the Royals this year. And that clearly isn't the case. He just has a natural ability to hit the ball hard, and when he gets a hold of it, it goes far. But way too often, it does not.
It is kind of amazing that, like, I keep going, okay. Well, he's just going to be a streaky guy, but there doesn't seem to be streaks.
No, the streak was between April 5th, was between about April.
Which means if you don't have any 10 games consecutively,
yeah,
that give you a 300 on base, you're also, by the way, let me inform you, not batting 300.
No. Or have an on base at 3. His streak was, he got the peak of his hot streak was April 15th. And he had a nice little streak there from about April 6th to April 15th, because he was hitting under 100 as of April 5th. And then from April 6th to April 15th, he hit about 340.
Okay.
And that was it. But
yeah,
since then, every single stretch, if you go 10 games out of that and begin on April 26th, if you get that April 15th, the end of that hot run out of the way, go 10 games forward and start on April 26th, he hasn't had a single 10-game streak with really good slash numbers. It's been just consistent. Every time you look up, it's 200, it's 250, 430 slug, and a 650 OPS.
And let's be clear. I mean, even if he doesn't have a 300 on-base percentage, Bobby Witt Jr. can help you win baseball
games.
Right? He does a lot of things. He's very athletic. But it would just be nice, you know, for the Royals to have a number two pick go on to be a star. Right? I'm not going to quibble on that word again today. But right now he's not.
Yeah.
And that would be nice, whether it's him or it's, you know, Zach Greinke. He was a star. He was the sixth pick, I think, when he came out.
Number six.
But that was a star. It'd be nice to see a star come through this organization. And, you know, like, you'd think, like, it would just...
Every week
coincidence, goes, yeah. You'd back ass into the
yes.
right guy.
Yeah, and every week that goes by with Bobby Witt lessens the likelihood that that's going to happen.
Kendrys Morales was a streaky player mm-hmm. for the Royals in 2015. And it would add up, right? You know, in 15, 22 homers, 106 RBIs. He would go stretches, because I remember Danny complaining about it. Like, he hasn't done anything for 2 weeks. But then he would hit, like, 5 home runs in 6 games with 5 doubles mm-hmm. and drive in 14. And you'd be like, yeah, there were one of those games, like, they won 11-1. So what do we really need all that? But other games, you know, he'd drive in 3 and they'd win 4-2.
Yeah.
And he would be the guy. Like, streaky's okay, too, but he just doesn't seem to be able to be streaky.
No, he hasn't. Because Big Ken, as he was called, the aggregate was pretty good. Hasn't been the case with
yeah.
Witt.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Last night was yet another excruciating one, because I'd like to see Zach Greinke get to 300 wins, which is a long, long shot, I get. But I want you to eat your words. And Zach's one of the guys over 200 wins. And if the Royals never, ever, ever score a run for the guy.
How do you do it?
Yeah.
You can't.
He may have 300 wins by now. If you count his first go-around with the Royals, and now he might already be there.
Yeah. I don't know. It just, like, listen, the point of Randy's tweet is obvious. All this time since those guys were brought into this organization, Zach has left and come back, and yet you're not able to find somebody who's better than them at their advanced ages.
Yeah.
The closest thing you found to a star in that time was the guy you traded, you got in return for the Zach Greinke trade in Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah. All right. 913-810-810. Greg, you'll lead us off when we come back. 913-810-810. Talking some Royals baseball. I want to get a little conversation about the stadiums as well. Some information that is out there. Something to add to it. We'll also talk about the NBA Finals. It's set. Nuggets Heat. Of course, you'll hear that right here on the home of all the great sporting events. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us here on a, like I said, sunny now Wednesday. Royals end up with a split with the St. Louis Cardinals. 2 days off because of a scheduling quirk and to where the Cardinals and Royals wanted to play it. They will be on TV, though.
Mm-hmm.
Can confirm that. Can confirm that they will be on TV. We've talked about it a lot. I heard Todd Lebo mentioning it. But, you know, I use the term, can you squint and see it?
Mm-hmm.
Can you see it coming together?
Yeah.
Yes.
I squint most of the time, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think you can.
With Michael Massey hitting well, that's one of the other things. If Michael Massey's stretch right now were Bobby Witt Jr.'s, how much better would you feel as a Royals fan?
Exactly. Massey right now over his last 24 games, 333, 420, 551, 971. If you took his run and put it on Witt and took Witt's run and put it on Massey, the Royals, it would be the exact same numbers, but the Royals would feel better about the future of their club because they would think that the good numbers were much more reliable because they came from a guy from which greatness was expected. The idea here is that Witt will get better, but that Massey will also cool off. Because that's what no one thought he's going to be this. And he's not going to be 300, 400, 500, 900. But there is some suggestion, and he looked kind of hitterish at times last year, to use that term, that maybe they found something in a player that maybe not as much was expected of. But it's going to, at this point, it might have to offset not getting as much as they had expected from thought to be a potentially generational player.
Yeah.
But what's expected from a player often does, almost every time, colors the way people look at its legitimacy early on in someone's career.
I know last night wasn't the best night. I want to make sure. Nick Prado, 0 for 2, but did walk once.
Yeah.
But Prado, I like the way he works the count.
Yeah.
Right? That gives me hope. Vinny Pascantino can flat out hit. I feel good about that.
Yeah,
I think a contract extension is coming for him. There's got to be other guys to go around him. Otherwise, it's just Mike Sweeney all over again. I feel good about Michael Massey starting to hit. Now, again, the first month counts too.
Yes.
Right. But you start to feel a little better. I would feel better if Drew Waters were hitting better. But I will point out he did go, I think it was 1 for 22 in his rehab stint before he took off. Now, he had that rehab stint, so he ought to be up and running. But maybe it just takes a little bit for the timing against big league pitching, and he will add to our optimism.
The thing I don't quite get about Prado is that I think the bat is better than I think I was expecting. But he's all through the minors. People have been told that he's better than Hosmer at first. I think Hosmer was a little overrated defensively, but he was a very good defensive first baseman. That Prado's better. He's got to play first base. To me, why is he not playing first base every time he's in the game?
Yeah, I because they don't have an outfielder.
That's true.
They can't develop an outfielder either.
As we always say, you got to facilitate the game. They got to have three guys out there, but
you know the guy in charge.
They can't put Vinny Pasquantino out there.
The guy in charge of outfield scouting and development loves how bad the pitching's been.
Yes.
Because it keeps the spotlight off the fact that was the last outfielder they developed?
It is unbelievable how barren that outfield is. At every level.
Lorenzo Cain. They traded for him with the buzzer about to go on the oven. He'd already been up with the Brewers for 50 games when they got a hold of him.
And they knew he was a fly chaser even before he started hitting.
Drew Waters, starts hitting, which he did at the end of last year, and I think he's going to hit better than what he's doing right now. But again, got him pretty much cooked by the Braves. Who's the last guy?
Give me a minute. Beltran?
I was going to say it's got to be Beltran, doesn't it?
I mean,
Jesus.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
He was a
legitimate major league starting outfielder.
But is that the last one?
Probably so. And that's been, what, 16, 17 years?
I mean, you need three of them.
Yeah.
It's like not being able to develop an offensive lineman in football. almost half the offense is them.
Yes, you want to give them
a third of the diamond is your outfield.
A quarter of a point for credit for backing into Alex Gordon. They developed him. He eventually became a real major league outfielder. None.
No.
Okay.
No. Not. No.
Not
plan
even a quarter?
B.
Okay.
No, I mean, I guess yes.
Give him some.
I will give them a quarter credit. Yes. They. Yeah. They got him to the big leagues, and they sent him out there, and he was a really good outfielder. Yes,
but he was only an outfielder because he failed at third base. He went, all right, let's
let him
dominate.
Find a, you know.
The fact that we're reaching that far further illustrates our point.
A niche? Well, you know, I give him Jay Melendez, wins a gold glove. I guess that's the key. Draft him somewhere else. I don't see Melendez winning a gold glove, by the way. 913-3-810-810. Let's go to Greg. You're in the program, Greg. What's going on, buddy?
Good afternoon, guys. Love your show.
Thank you, sir.
I was listening yesterday when the one caller called in and said, you know, that he would like to see the fans have a little more passion or, you know, that. And I heard he mentioned, you know, maybe we should be a little more like Philadelphia. Here's my counter to that. And I know you've been around here for a long time. I'm 46 years old. I've been alive since the Royals were good in the 70s and good in the 80s. And we lost Mr. Kauffman. And since then, it has been extremely grim. I know we had our 2003 year where we were just on the outside and we had 14-15. But the track record is a loser. They are flat out a 350 win percentage team over the course of the last 20-something years, if you exclude those three. I give the Royals every year until June 1st, and if they can be around 500 by June 1st, I figure we've got a chance. We didn't even make it to May 1st this year, and we were already out of the hunt and 10 games under 500. Until the organization changes their trajectory, and, you know, why should we as fans have expectations that they're going to be good? I think you'd be angry if you thought we were going to be good and, you know.
Can we back up? Like, they did change the trajectory. Nobody, listen, that's the thing that I've said so many times in this town about all of our teams. Oh, they hired a new guy. Yeah, and we'll see. Right? Like, everybody can't wait to get rid of whoever. It doesn't mean it's fixed. It just means you're trying something new. So, like, they changed the trajectory, right? It may not have been, well, you know, because, and this is the problem. This is one of the things that John Sherman needed to consider when he made this move, was that if it doesn't turn around quickly, the fans are going to call and say what you're saying. They're going to view it as no change has been made whatsoever, right? Because, well, JJ was there the whole time. That's why I wish JJ Piccolo had gotten a GM job someplace else. Because I like JJ Piccolo. I root for JJ Piccolo. He's a good person. He's good to have in this town. I think he's a smart baseball guy, but I think this is a really difficult job to succeed at. And he comes in having to carry the burdens of his predecessor because he was there with his predecessor. I know for a fact, when having conversations with JJ Piccolo, he has different opinions about a number of different things in how a baseball team should be run from where Dayton Moore was. I don't know if it will add up to being a championship general manager, but he's been given a shot, and now he needs to get that shot. A shot for a GM is not 56 games, right? It's like 2+ years.
Yep.
At least it's a couple of drafts, a couple of trade deadlines, a couple of off seasons before you can say, okay, we're not going anywhere. And that's, I know fans don't want to hear that, but that's reality.
Well, I know what you're saying. When the Royals make their moves, though, it's almost like they're rearranging the chairs on the Titanic.
Oh, that's fair.
They cannot get over the hump. And the thing that irritates me the most is you've got a billionaire owner that is running just like Glass did. He's running it like on a shoestring budget, and I'm afraid that the Royals have got another owner that just will sit back, collect the checks, and doesn't want to ante up and play big boy poker. Because if all he's going to do is sit there and think everything's going to be developed through the farm system, it's just going to be more of the same. I hate to say this, and it'll break my heart the day it happens, but I think it has to happen. I think you have to trade Salvi while he's got value. And I think definitely you could get something, but I also don't know that the Royals can be trusted to make a trade that's going to work. I mean, that's the problem, is it's following this team is like almost mental abuse, and especially if you watch them every day.
I hear what you're saying, Greg, and thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And listen, they haven't made trades. That's one of the reasons why, like, oh, I can't believe I'm going to say it, but why? If you want winning baseball, what we have to accept and what this organization has to embrace is that nobody is going to be George Brett. It's never going to it should never ever happen again unless there is a major restructuring of how the economics of baseball work, which I don't see coming. You should root for there to never be another George Brett. Get that out of your head. Get out of your head the idea of going. You might be able to go to Cooperstown and see a guy inducted into the Hall of Fame. Maybe it'll be Salvi. I hope it is. I hope he hits 40 home runs in a Rose uniform for the next 4 years. And that'll probably get him over the hump. It'll get him close. Next 5 years. With a 50 and 440s, that'll get him into the Hall of Fame. And I hope we're going, and even if he plays a year or two someplace else, he'll have a KC on his hat. The Hall of Fame decides. But that's been part of the problem. Is this? It's why I grew so tired of all the 85, and I've been corrected, there weren't that many 85s. Like, some people in the Royals organization reached out to me like, we didn't have a... It felt like there was an 85 reunion like every other week.
Yeah.
And there wasn't.
10, 15, 20.
There wasn't 20. Necessarily by the Royals. There were some around town, and there were events around town. And I know, as the guy who worked for the radio station who had the Royals at that time, that's what we were promoting. And there was, remember the Royals! Like, our vignettes and our little sales pieces were... Remember when the Royals were good? Like, so, no, it wasn't Royals done, but around town it was like the only thing you could do. I know as a radio group, it's the only thing they felt they could do to try to sell Royals baseball was to remind you that 20 years before, they had been good, okay? So, yeah, I get it, but that whole mindset has to go. And I believe J.J. Piccolo understands that. I hope he does. That, like the you know, just coming out of your mouth right there, Greg, saying, well, I hate the idea of seeing Salvi go. Why? Why? He's played great baseball for the Royals, and if he goes and three really good players come back, if he goes and you get Alcides Escobar, Lorenzo Cain, you know, Jake Odorizzi, you get all three of those guys back for the careers that they had, pretty good. If those guys are turned into James Shields and Wade Davis, as Jake Odorizzi was, you know, part of the deal that went there, Why do you hate seeing it? Like, what do you want? I mean, this is why, and Greg, I know it was just a little piece of what you're saying. I'm not trying to paraphrase, but I just, that part jumps at me. Because it's that kind of thing that had Dayton Moore believing that we as Royals fans would rather watch Salvi play his entire career in a Royals uniform and never win more than 60 games in a season the rest of his career, and that we're happier because we had our Salvi. Like, he said it on a podcast, he backtracked from it, but I think he believed it.
Yeah, I think the backtrack was he realized what he'd said.
I mean, I think he realized that people took it to mean they don't want to win. Oh, I believe that everyone feels Royals fans want to win, but I think the general manager of the baseball team felt that you as a fan base would be happier to have Salvi and win 55 games a year every year than not have Salvi and win 95 games. I don't know how he... I do. A little bit of it is like he wanted that too.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm not blaming the fans for why Dayton Moore didn't have more success in the back half of his regime here. That's not my point. But statements like that, like if I love Salvi, but here's the other. If you're winning, you'll love whoever's wearing that uniform.
Yes, Salvi became who he is
because
you only
like Salvi
because
they won.
Right. If they don't make those other trades, you don't think about Salvi as much.
Like, you know, so don't, again, it's not the fans. It's not like, Greg, that you're to blame because you love watching Salvi. You're not. But, like, as an organization, it doesn't really matter what, Greg, you want or I want. They have to do what's best for the team. And what's best for the baseball team is to trade guys at the maybe second tier of their peak, right? They're past the peak, but they're still a really good player. That's when they need to be traded. All of them, regardless of where you are in wins and losses. If your goal is to sustain a competitive ball club year after year, and you're not going to put it all into one big run, they all should be traded right after the peak of their abilities. Right? And sometimes before the peak of their abilities. Everyone should be available. I've never understood in rotisserie baseball and fantasy football, hey, I can't trade him. Well, why? Your team sucks. He's the only guy that, you know, the only guy on your team I will give you something for. I'm going to give you more than he's worth because I got a really good wideout and a really good tight end that don't even play for me. I need a running back. Your guy's pretty good. I will overpay to get him. No, I just love watching him. Well, you're a dumbass.
Yes. There's a reason why you don't win.
And like, you can't be that way. That's been the Royals as an organization to a degree. Now, you got to go out and try to create the trade, too. Like, not just sitting with, well, nobody's calling. Well, who have you called?
Your phone dials out, too, doesn't it?
God, man, you haven't called me forever. I'm like, well, buttons work on your phone, too, jackass. Like, give me a break. So, this organization, if they're going to win, is going to have to be more transactional. That's the term that everybody uses. And that means Salvador Perez should have been traded 2 years ago. 48 home runs, who wants him? Like, what's the best thing we can get for him? Because we got MJ Melendez coming behind, and we're going to put him in there, and we're going to go. 913-3-810-810. Jazzy J, you're next here in the program. We'll play The Feud coming up next hour. Your chance to win a Henhouse gift card. You can do a little shopping. The all-natural pork tenderloin, $2.49 a pound. We do a lot of pork tenderloin around. My wife makes an Asian pork tenderloin.
Nice.
One of her specialties with a broccoli slaw. It's Asian broccoli slaw. Very good.
She's pretty good on the food.
I blame her for my weight battles.
Help.
No, she actually cooks really healthy. I just eat too much of it. 913-3-810-810. Jazzy J, you're in the program. What's up, my friend?
Hey, Seren, thanks for taking the call. Love the show, of course.
You're a good man. We appreciate talking to you, buddy.
Hey, so first and foremost, I don't believe there's a Royals game tonight. There's no basketball. If you're able, there's a 30 for 30 documentary that they've been running. It was part one last night and part two tonight. You can stream part one on ESPN. But it was about the American Gladiators.
Yes.
Remember that show from the 90s?
I think those guys really should only make 25 grand a year. I think that sounds totally fair. I don't know why they were upset.
I thought it was a great documentary.
I did too.
American Gladiators.
Weren't you shocked that they made 25 grand?
Yes, I was shocked they made 25 grand.
The guys and gals that were the gladiators, not the contestants, made $25,000.
Unbelievable.
And they detail.
Unreal.
I like the one guy that's like basically in traction. Because they didn't have the right safety equipment when he fell off one of the things. And yeah, I'm with you, Jay. I really recommend it. If you ever watch that show, you will really enjoy the 30 for 30.
If I might note, when Jazzy J first told me what he was talking about, and I said, oh, that's kind of funny, I put him on hold, and our intern said, what was so funny? And I said, oh, he wants to talk about American Gladiators. Our intern responds, what's that?
Yeah. Oh, of course. I mean, it's
we introduced him to Reservoir Dogs. We got to get him on Gladiators.
We need a book report. By like Wednesday, I'm going to say
MLA format, double spaced.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I'm with you, Jay. It was really cool, and I was like, God, that's it. That's kind of. And then they're like, oh, part two tomorrow. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. It was fun. I'm with you. I echo your sentiments on that one. How about the Royals?
How about the Royals?
Sir? How about those Royals?
How about? Well, they're not as entertaining as the American Gladiators, but I will say this. My beef with the Royals is, one, fans will fill the stands if you win. We proved that as a city back in 2014 and 2015 and with the Chiefs. And I guarantee you, too, Sorrent, if Pat Mahomes breaks his leg and this team is 2-13, I don't expect a full house at Arrowhead come December when it's freezing cold outside, right? That's just the nature of these expensive sports to attend. And so my beef with the Royals is just the scouting department. This team, you were saying we need to find a star. I'm not asking for a Mike Trout or someone like that, but it just seems like with all the picks that they've had, they just can't hit. I think the Royals have a scouting department issue, and that's really the big differentiator between – the Royals and the Chiefs. The Chiefs know how to go out and scout, and they get lucky with the Travis Kelce's, the Tyreek Hill's, the Patrick Mahomes of the world. This Royals organization just cannot get it right in the scouting department. Do you think they have a scouting issue, and all listen off the air?
Okay. I think that we are going to come to a conclusion, and Jay, always good to talk to you. If the young players aren't playing a lot better, and Michael Massey's playing better. Okay, so
yeah,
let's wait and see. Michael Massey goes on to hit 18 home runs, .285 with a .330 on base percentage, and 35 doubles. We're going to feel different about how they scouted and how they developed.
Right.
But the way they made moves last offseason certainly seemed to put the problem at Dayton Moore's feet, at Mike Matheny's feet, and at Cal Eldred's feet. Now, is that because that's the only place they thought the problem was? And we're going to find out that, no, they're going to say, okay, no, we have other changes to make. Or was that all they could do in one off season? And that we're going to watch after this draft, they're going to fire like four scouts. Because in the off season, you're already halfway to your next draft. You're already down the road. And post-draft is a time that I know a lot of NFL teams make their scouting changes. And so we're going to see changes come after this draft. Like, hey, the guys that have been negotiating with families and out scouting players and all the backroom deals that we know go on, we can't be turning that upside down now. So we got to get through the draft, and are we going to see changes after the draft? Well, that would be the scouting department changes. Are we going to see that at the end of the season? That they didn't have time to make all those changes? I'm with you. If young players don't play better, there is going to have to be more changes than what they've had to this point.
We'll certainly get a very good idea of what the organization thinks is the issue by when those things come down, if they do, though.
Yeah, for sure.
Whatever the timeline is, that's what they thought.
Yeah, and I think they're going to – I think they will absolutely if things are not better, if the young players are not turning the corner, if the young hitters are not hitting, then more change has to come. And that'll be the first sign that I go, okay, we have a problem with J.J. Piccolo. Right now, I honestly can't tell you, do I like the results of the big league club? No. Would I like him to be better? Would he like him to be better? Would everybody in the organization like him to be better? Yes. But can I directly tie failures going on right now at the big league club to J.J. Piccolo? I cannot. But if young players are not getting better, if Gavin Cross is still struggling and no changes are made to the scouting and development people, then yes, that will be directly tied to J.J. Piccolo.
All right, among Hall of Fame quarterbacks that entered the league after 1960, who has the fewest postseason wins? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.